I'm happy to be here amongst all of you today. And I've been taking a series of classes on relationships, which we had two parts yesterday evening and today morning. So today, of course, will be a separate class. And even without that background, we can understand what I'm going to speak. Once a person was driving a car. He was driving above the speed limit. So at that time, a police caught him. And the police person said, "Did you not see the speed limit?" And he said, "I saw the speed limit, I just didn't see you." So sometimes people think that doing wrong is not the problem. Getting caught while doing wrong is the problem. So similarly, when we act in any role in our life, even in our relationships, at that time, sometimes we just act the way we feel like acting. And it's only when we get into trouble, then we think that, oh, what is the problem? That this person is behaving like this, and that is causing a trouble to me. So when we interact with each other, at that time, some people around us bring the good side out of us. And some people bring the bad out of us. So if we consider, say, the example of Manthara and Kaikeyi. So what was the effect of Manthara on Kaikeyi? Kaikeyi, whatever insecurity she had, whatever fear she had, that, oh, I will lose the position as the favorite queen of Dashrath. The fear of losing that position, Manthara brought it out. So when someone brings out the bad side within us, now if you see, Kaikeyi was not a bad person. And after that, Kaikeyi, eventually when Dashrath passed away, she regretted, what did I do? What insanity, what madness came over me because of which I did something like this. So in her case, her insecurity, her fear, her greed, that was stabbed by someone else. So some people bring out the bad side within us. And conversely, we will see that some people bring out the good side within us. We all have a low, we have a part of us which tries to act according to principles, and a part of us which just acts for immediate pleasures. So when we face choices, when we face difficulties, at that time, when we interact with the other person, often our feeling is, this person did like this, so I did like that. Now, then children, sometimes they start fighting. And the parents may say, why did you start fighting? You know, he spoke like this to me. And I spoke like that. And then he did like this. He pushed me. Then I pushed him. And then both of them start fighting. So in this case, basically, what we say, that person did like this, so I did like this. No, he pushed me first, so I pushed him back. So here what we are saying indirectly by this, is that our behavior is a result of other people's behavior. A did like this, so I did like this. So our behavior is a result of other people's behavior. Now, there are two different things. Our behavior as a result of another person's behavior, or our behavior as a response to another person's behavior. Depending on how others are acting, we will have to respond appropriately. But when we say that, say for example, if I take this phone and I drop it, I won't drop it. But if I drop it, the phone has no choice, has no free will. If it is drop, it will fall down. So in this case, the phone is having no consciousness, no free will, and whatever situation it is put in, that this is a cause that I let go of the phone, the result will be it will fall down. So when we say that person acted like that, so I acted like this, then we are in a sense saying that actually we are simply a product of that person's actions. So our actions need to be determined not just by the other person's actions. Our actions need to be determined by our principles, our values. How should I act best in this situation? So what do I mean by values? We all have certain goals in life. We all have certain purposes in life. Say if we are traveling in a particular direction, say if parent decide to take their child for some picnic, maybe to a zoo or to Disneyland or somewhere like that, and say it's a 2-hour drive, and then there are two children over there. So the parents are there and there are two children. Say now both of them are sitting on the back seat and both of them are glued to the window, and one child is constantly saying, are we there, is restless, oh when am I going to get there. And for that child, the ride is meaningless. It's primarily getting to the destination, and when you get to the destination, that's where the child thinks the enjoyment is. And if I don't get to the destination, as long as they not got there, everything is simply just a time pass, just something which I have to go through till I get to the destination. Now the other child is also observing, but the child is also ready to enjoy the ride. Oh, this garden is so nice, this building is so beautiful, this mountain is so attractive, and the child is curious, oh, what is this. So there's a child is enjoying the ride and is also getting to the destination. Now suppose halfway along the road suddenly a storm comes up. Now when the storm comes, at that time the child, that their parents realize that we just can't move forward, we can't get to the Disneyland or wherever. Then what happens? The child whose whole purpose was to get to the destination, child, oh, such a terrible thing, I couldn't get there. And for the child, the whole ride becomes meaningless. But for the child who was enjoying the ride, also observing how the scenes along the road were good. For the child, okay, didn't get to the destination, that's disappointing. But it is not as disappointing as for the child whose only purpose was to get to the destination. So similarly, in our lives, if we consider our life to be like a journey. Now in this journey, we all have certain destinations in mind. Okay, I want to be happy. I want to be successful. I want to get a promotion in my job. I want to get a raise. I want to get a bigger house. We all have certain goals in our life. And those goals can be with respect to possessions. They can also be with respect to relationships. Now, for some people, just achieving the goal is the primary thing. And every relationship people form with the hope of being a controller. That I'll control this person and in that way we'll change things. Every relationship begins with the hope of being a controller, and every relationship soon gives us the realization we are not the controllers, that we don't have control over other people. We can't change the way other people behave. So when this happens, when we realize that I cannot control the other person, then sometimes this may lead to frustration. Why is this person like this? Why is this person not understanding? Why is this person acting in this way? And that frustration can take away all the joy from the relationship. And all that is left with is the pain, the misery. When this starts happening, then the relationship starts becoming a source of great pain. We start every relationship with the hope of joy. But then, when we start finding that, okay, I'm not able to make the person be the way I want them to be, then we start feeling, what is the point of this relationship? Why am I doing this? So in every relationship, if we see that, like I talked about the journey, car drive. When we are driving a car, there is, one can either go to the destination and think that is the only purpose, or one can also enjoy the ride. So similarly, if we think of a relationship as, okay, I want to get the other person to become like this, I want the other person to do like this, and when that doesn't work out, then you start feeling, what am I doing over here? Start feeling everything is pointless. But if we see every relationship as an opportunity for our own growth. Our own growth means that we understand that in every relationship, no matter how the other person behaves, by behaving properly, I can grow into a better human being. Then we see that even the journey itself is productive. I'll give two examples to illustrate. Okay, this seems a little abstract. I earlier said that some people can bring the good out of us and some people can bring the bad out of us. And this is not just dependent on the other person. This is also dependent on us and how we choose. Yes, people are the way they are. It is said that some people bring happiness wherever they go. And some people bring happiness whenever they go. कुछ लोग ऐसे होते हैं जो जहां जाते हैं सुख लाते हैं. कुछ लोग ऐसे जाते हैं जब जाते हैं तो सुख लाते हैं. So there is a difference. There are some people who are difficult people and we can't control how people are. But we are not simply the products of other people's behavior. How can we say that we are not products? If somebody is behaving in a particular way, won't I behave like that? Won't that affect my behavior? Yes, it will, but it doesn't control our behavior. Simple example. Suppose we are working in office and we are at home and say some family member does something makes us very angry, and then in the office our boss gives us some excess, too much work, and that makes us angry. Now in office, will we shout at our boss? Why not? Maybe we have been given an unfair amount of work and it's excessive. And in home also we come back and my family may expect us do this, and we get angry. In both situations we get angry. But in the office, we usually won't shout at the boss. Whereas at home, we just shout at our family members. Why the difference?
Necessity.
So what it means is that the other person's actions are not the sole deciders of our behavior. If I understand that, okay, if I shout at my boss, afterwards, I may have nothing to shout at also. Isn't it? So, although this person makes me angry, if I consider some other factor, then I can control the expression of my anger. There is a difference between feeling the emotion of anger and expressing that anger. And in this case of the boss and the office, there you may say that, okay, because it's a matter of my livelihood, I will control myself. The specific cause can be put aside, but the point I'm making is that we do have the capacity to discipline our emotions. No matter how much we feel that the other person is troubling me, we do have the capacity to discipline our emotions. In fact, one definition of determination means to put our intention above our emotion. Determination means to put our intention above our emotion. So an example for this would be, if somebody is rowing a boat. They are rowing a boat, and while they are rowing the boat, in the ocean or in the sea or in the river, wherever they are rowing the boat, often there are currents of water. The water is flowing in a particular direction. So now if the water is flowing in this direction and the person wants to go in that direction, in the opposite other direction, then they have to exert that much more force. But they can do it. Although the water is flowing in another direction, they can exercise more and they can go in a direction opposite to the water. So similarly, sometimes our emotions may flow in a particular direction, but by our intention, we can move against those emotions. So our emotions are like the water moving in one direction, and the intention is like the person rowing. It's not easy. The water is flowing in a particular direction. To go in the opposite direction is not easy. But in principle, it is possible. In practice, how much effort it will require, that will vary from situation to situation. But the first principle is, when we say, this person did like this, so I did like that. What it means is that we are actually giving up our power of autonomy. We are saying that I am simply a reaction to this person. This person did like this, so I did like that. But yes, we have to respond to other people. But our actions are not simply reactions, or they shouldn't be simply reactions to the other person. So how is this possible? Another example to illustrate this is that suppose there is a cloth shop, and there are many clothes which are displayed in the racks, and there are customers who come to look at the clothes. Now when the customers come, at that time some customers actually demand, they want to see the whole shop. They will look at 50, 100, 200, 300 clothes. And then at the end they may not take even one cloth also. So now the attendants, they have to maybe should show the clothes, explain the merits of the clothes, and then if nothing is taken, they have to put it all back again. Now some customers may be very fastidious, very, very finicky, and they will look at the whole shop and they'll find fault. This is not good, this is not good, this is not good, this is not good, and they'll go away. Now, normally when a customer comes into a shop, the various attendants who are there, they will want to serve that customer. Because if they make a sale, they get the credit for that. But some customers who are especially troublesome, who just criticize everything and don't purchase anything. Then if such a customer comes in, normally if a customer comes into the shop, the attendants will go to the customer. But when this customer comes in, all the attendants go away from the customer. All the attendants go away. Why? Because if this customer is very troublesome. But then suppose an attendant attends to the customer. And when they are attending to that customer, at that time, say that customer says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that customer is as usual irritable. He just gets irritated, irritates others, and finally doesn't purchase anything and goes away. Now, from the attendance perspective, oh, you took so much of my time, you did not buy anything. It will seem like a failure. So going back to the earlier example of riding a car, wanted to get to the destination, along half the way, there's a blockage, you couldn't get to the destination. It's all a failure. But if the attendant knows that there are cameras everywhere and my boss is watching, and the boss is watching and the boss is noting how I am behaving. Of course, the boss will be happy if the sale happens. But from the boss perspective, the boss may see that this person, although this customer is such a difficult customer, this attendant remains so cool, so polite, so calm throughout. And then the boss may come and tell the attendant, you know how to deal with tough people. You know, you are a cool guy, you know how to deal with tough people, therefore, I will make you in charge of this whole floor. The attendant may not make any sale, but then still, the attendant will get a raise, will get a promotion. That means in the interaction, there is one definition of success is making the sale. Another definition of success is pleasing the boss. And if we consider that in every relationship for us, we want the other person to do something and the other person is not doing it. If the other person does not do it, we consider, oh, that's a failure. But if we consider that actually we are meant to serve Krishna. Krishna is like the third person in every relationship for a devotee. Krishna is like the boss who is watching. And Krishna is observing how we are behaving. But sometimes, some people's behavior, we feel this person is so frustrating. But through that, we may learn more humility, more tolerance, more patience. And that can help us to grow. So that will actually be to our benefit. Although we did not get the external success, but if we decide that I am not going to let this person control my behavior. You are rude to me, so I'll be rude to you. I will behave in a polite, proper way. If we do that, by that we will please Krishna. And we will grow spiritually. So sometimes we may decide a particular thing that I am not going to get angry with anyone. I am not going to get angry. I am not going to explode. Now the problem with any kind of resolution, especially a negative resolution, I will not do this. It is very difficult to make it work. Why? Because as soon as we say not, I will not do this, our mind starts feeling deprived. Why can't I do it? Who is going to tell me not to do it? So as soon as we make a no resolution, say somebody says, okay, I will not do this, I will not do that, I will not do that. When the not thing comes up, what happens is the mind immediately starts thinking about that and thinking about how I will be deprived if I don't do that. A simple example, say if I tell you, for the next 30 seconds, please don't think of a pink monkey. Except for a pink monkey, you can think of whatever you want, but just don't think of a pink monkey. Try it for the next 30 seconds. Try not to think of a pink monkey. When you try this, what will happen? In your whole life, you may not have thought of a pink monkey. But now, a pink monkey. How did a monkey become pink? Well, did somebody paint it? Or was it born pink? Pink. You start thinking only of a pink monkey. So see, our mental world is different from our physical world. Say, if I touch this mic and if there's some electric current over there and I feel a little shocked, then I may decide, okay, I'll not touch this mic. So with respect to the physical world, if I decide I will not touch something, I can keep a distance from it. Because the thing is out here and I am in here. I am here. But with respect to the thought world, actually, when I say I will not do something, okay, then what is happening? I will not do something. By just that thought, I am already connecting with that. I will not think of a pink monkey. If you consider thought to be like an energy, then that thought energy is already gone out and reached that object, pink monkey. So that's why we need to, if at all we want to make a resolution, it is much more important to make a positive resolution than a negative resolution. Now, negative resolutions are also required, but our focus has to be on the positive. That means, instead of saying, I will not become angry, we can change it and say, I will always speak politely. Or, I can take it further, I will always respect everyone's right to be spoken to politely. Everyone has a right to be spoken to politely. That means that, yes, people may be unreasonable, but nobody likes it when somebody yells at them. So there are times when we have to speak strongly. There are times when we have to act strongly. But we can do it all in a polite way. We don't have to. Sometimes some people say, I'm not going to become angry. And they start becoming angry. And somebody says, you're becoming angry. I'm not becoming angry. I'm not angry. So, what will happen is that even the resolution, sometimes we get angry at the other person and sometimes we get angry at ourselves for having become angry. So, we can just get trapped in our emotions. So, now we may say, when I said that we shouldn't become angry or we should be polite to others, does this mean that we tolerate anything and everything? Say, going back to the previous example of the customer who is coming. Now, the attendant may be polite, but say the customer starts stealing something from the shop, does at that time the attendant still remain polite? Attendant may still be polite, but attendant has to stop that. So, stop that. The attendant cannot allow things to be stolen from the shop. So, there are limits to what kind of behavior is acceptable and what is not acceptable. So broadly speaking, when we face a difficult situation, when somebody is behaving in an unreasonable way, at that time we have three options of how to respond. I call this in English as tolerate, mitigate or emigrate. So, tolerate means just accept it. Say for example, if somebody goes from, say, India to a place like Sydney or Melbourne in Australia, which is very cold. Then, if it's very cold, what can you do? If that's where our job is, that's where our family is, then you tolerate. The second could be, that we decide, right, this is extremely cold, I have to do something. when we get very nice warm clothes, wherever we are staying or whether we are working, make sure that the heating arrangement is good over there. And we try to do change some external to make the situation okay, that is mitigate. And sometimes we find, this is just not working for me. The weather is so bad, I am constantly sick, I am always miserable. So then I will emigrate. I will move to some other city. So all three options are there for us. So similarly for us, when we are in a difficult situation, we can choose one of these three options. Let's consider the Pandavas. Initially, when the Pandavas were opposed, when the Pandavas were persecuted by the Kauravas, when Bhima was poisoned, at that time, what did the Pandavas say? Yudhishthir said, this is a domestic quarrel, just keep it inside the home, don't publicize. They tolerated it. Even when the attempt was made to kill them, to burn them alive, they tolerated it. Okay, they escaped from there, but they did not press a case against the Kauravas. So they got a kingdom, but then they were given half of the kingdom, which was almost a barren half. Still, they tolerated it. However, tolerance is a virtue, but tolerance is not the supreme virtue. The supreme virtue is dharma. We are all meant to follow dharma. We are all meant to act in the right way. So eventually what happened? When Draupadi was dishonored, when the Pandavas, all their kingdom was stolen away from them, when even after all that, Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan was still so shameless. He didn't apologize, he didn't correct himself. He even tried to arrest Krishna. Then they decided that this cannot be tolerated. The arresting Krishna was an outrageous action. It's like, say, if in India and Pakistan there is some tension on the border, and to resolve that tension, say the Indian Prime Minister goes to Pakistan for peace negotiation, and instead of listening to the peace proposal, Pakistan tries to arrest the Indian Prime Minister. What outrageous! War would break out in that day. So the Kauravas trying to arrest Duryodhan arrest Krishna was like that. So then the Pandavas decided this cannot be tolerated. Then they mitigated. And mitigation was by fighting a war. They fought the Kurukshetra war to establish dharma. Not just to get back at the Kauravas, not just to take revenge, but to establish dharma. And then eventually, when Krishna departed from the world, at that time, what did they do? They also immigrated. Now our role is over, I'll also depart from the world. So they immigrated. So tolerate, mitigate, immigrate. The Pandavas at different times exhibited all these three different reactions. And that same principle we can apply in our lives also. Say, how we respond to others is decided by our bigger purpose. Suppose we are going in a train. Say in a place like Mumbai, there's a local. The local's capacity is 50 and there are 250 people over there. So say we are crowded together in a local, and at that time, say some people just like to boss around. So we are standing in a local and somebody starts pushing us. And then we get angry. How dare you push me? You think you are so strong? I'll push you back. And they push us and we push them back, and they push us and we push them back. And we get so caught in pushing each other that our station comes and goes and we're still pushing. Now, that would be foolish. So, if we understand that actually I am here for just a short while, so this person wants to boss around, let them boss around, I just move aside and I will get to my destination. So, tolerance means that we keep a small thing small so that we can focus on the big thing. The big thing is getting to the destination. The small thing is where I stand in the car, stand in the train. That's how we tolerate. But if that person starts pushing us out of the car, out of the train itself, then can we tolerate? No. If we tolerate, we will not get to a destination. Then at that time, we may have to take a stand. We may have to push back again. We may have to complain to the TC. So there we have to mitigate. Or we may decide that this person is too bossy. Let me move into another bogey. Let me move into another coach. We may immigrate. So tolerate, mitigate, immigrate. We can choose this based on our purpose. What is important for me? What is it that I want to achieve? And if we have that purpose of serving Krishna and doing something constructive in the service to Krishna, then in every situation we can respond maturely. And the Bhagavad Gita explains that by acting in according to our principles, then whatever situation we are in, we can actually grow towards Krishna. We can transform ourselves even if we don't transform the other person. I'll conclude with one example. Now, who spoke the Bhagavad Gita to whom? Krishna spoke to Arjun. But somebody else also spoke it to somebody else. Sanjay to Dhritarashtra. Isn't it? Yes. Now, if you see these two conversations, at one level, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun, and Arjun's heart was transformed by that. Arjun initially was saying, I will not fight, but Arjun became ready to fight. That means Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjun was successful. It had the desired result. Now, Sanjay also spoke the same knowledge to Dhritarashtra. Now, was that speaking successful? Dhritarashtra was attached, was in material consciousness, and Dhritarashtra also understood the glory of Krishna. Sorry, Dhritarashtra also heard the glory of Krishna as spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. So, did Dhritarashtra's heart change? No. So, what happened is, because Sanjay speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Dhritarashtra was not successful. But if we see at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, what is Sanjay's mood? In 18.76 and 77, 78 is the last verse, but the two verses before that, when Sanjay speaks, there he says that Tatcha Samsmritya Samsmritya, that I'm remembering again and again, Samvadamim Adbhutam Keshavarjunayo Punyam Rishyamicha Muhurmuhu Rajan Samsmritya Samsmritya Rupamatya Adbhutam Hare Vismayo Me Mahan Rajan Rishyamicha Puna Puna. So in both verses he is using the word Rishyami. He says, I'm delighted, I am jubilant. Normally, if somebody is not very successful, they will not be jubilant. How is Sanjay jubilant? Because he is remembering. He says, I remember Krishna's wonderful message, and just by remembering that message, I am thrilled. He says, I am remembering Krishna's form, especially the form of the Vishwarupa, which Krishna showed, the majestic form. Atrupam Atyadbhutam Hare. And by that also, I am satisfied. I am feeling jubilant. So, there was no external success for Sanjay in terms of changing Dhritarashtra. But because Sanjay became conscious of Krishna, just by speaking the Bhagavad Gita, by remembering Krishna, which was the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita, he was able to apply the Bhagavad Gita in terms of remembering Krishna, even though he was not able to transform Dhritarashtra. But by that applying, he was able to grow spiritually. So the important thing is that in every situation, for us, we can grow spiritually by striving to be conscious of Krishna. and we don't let the other person determine how we act. We consider that how the other person is acting, but we use our God-given intelligence and see how best can I please Krishna in this situation? How can I serve Krishna in this situation? Then we can choose whether to tolerate, mitigate or immigrate. And we can move forward in our life in a responsible way. So when we act in this way, we will find that we will grow spiritually irrespective of how the other person responds. And no matter how that person acts, that they'll bring out not the worst within us, but the best within us. And that is what is going to ultimately matter for us. Every relationship that we have, the particular conflict that we have, that is temporary. But our relationship with Krishna is eternal. And the growth that we can have in that relationship, that is also eternal. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita urges us to focus on in our day-to-day life. So I'll summarize. I spoke about the theme of how we can stick to our principles rather than let other people determine our actions. And when we say that this person did like this, so I did like that, then basically we are saying that that person determines my actions. But we are not sentient beings, we are conscious beings. And we can respond to other people rather than react to other people. And for that, we have to have our principles. So I talked about living according to principles brings its own satisfaction. It's like a person going for a ride. They want to get to a destination, but they can enjoy the ride also as they're going along. So living according to principles means we understand that in every relationship, I just don't want to get the other person to do something. I want to please Krishna. Just like the attendant wants to make a sale, but also wants to please the boss. So that way, when our purpose is to please Krishna in whatever we do, then we can choose intelligently how best we can respond to a particular person's behavior. I talked about three broad options: tolerate, mitigate and immigrate. We just accept it, we try to change it, or we try to move away from the situation. And we decide that based on what is our purpose. That in the train example I talked about also, we just accept that the person is pushing and move aside, or take a stand, or move to some other location. But the important thing is, we do this in a mood of what is the important thing in my life? What is the purpose? And based on that, we choose. And I talk about how sometimes we may not get external success, but we may grow internally. That's what happened to Sanjay. Although he couldn't transform Dhritarashtra's heart, but he himself was enlivened because he was applying the Bhagavad Gita. He was absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna and he felt thrilled by that. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Let's go.
He talked about keeping the intention above the emotion, and then we tolerate and the mitigate. Now what we see and in our life also, when we are more satisfied, when we are more inspired, and in that mood, then we automatically we keep that intention above the emotion, and then all those things, toleration and everything. So, and you have given the example of Sanjay, he was very much satisfied by the instruction. Can we understand that we have to keep always the higher purpose, all the time moving the higher purpose? Sometimes it can become difficult also, right? So how do we find the balance or kind of way around?
So keeping the higher purpose in mind always is quite difficult. Yes, when I say that we should keep the higher purpose in mind, see, we are all human beings. And we will sometimes react to situations also. So the point is that there are certain emotions may come suddenly within us. See, sometimes the waves may be so strong that no matter how much the person tries to row the boat, the waves are just pushing in the other direction. Sometimes it may just be like that. But the waves are not always like that. After the waves subside, then again we take the right intention and we move. Sometimes our emotions may just overpower us. But in principle we understand that I don't want to act only according to my emotions. So rather than thinking of this as a digital logic, zero or one, either I get angry or I don't get angry. You can see that in between, that okay, sometimes I might just react in a particular way, but as soon as I realize, I'll do course correction. See, I want to go in this direction, but sometimes the wave is so forceful, it pushes me in the other direction. But as soon as I realize, right, this was not the way, that this, I didn't want to go in this direction, the wave subsides, then I can go in that direction. So we can't always control our emotions. Sometimes they may just be forceful. But just because we can't control our emotions, doesn't mean that we have to be controlled by our emotions. So sometimes what happens, we act in a particular way, and after that, we just continue, the mind makes us angry. Now that you become angry, now become fully angry. And then even if we realize, okay, this is not so good, but still we keep going in that direction. So it is said that when a plane is flying, 90% of the time the plane is off course. If you are going from here to Mumbai, the plane is off course most of the time. But the pilot keeps reorienting the plane. It goes off course because of its momentum, because of its speed, because of the wind, atmosphere. But the pilot knows the destination. It goes off course, bring it back on course. Goes off course, bring it back on course. Goes off course, bring it back on course. And by that continuous reorientation, the plane gets to the destination. So similarly, our emotions may make us go off course. But as soon as we realize, we get them back on course. Okay?
Because in any emotional outburst, we always say we never meant. The intention is sometimes that happens.
Okay. So, now, it's a good point that in emotions, we get angry and we say, I didn't mean that. That is true, and that's why there has to be a basic foundation of trust in the relationship. Like we know in the Ramayana that when Ram had gone to get the deer, which was Marichi, and then Marichi spoke out in the voice of Ram. At that time, Sita said, go and help Ram to Lakshman. And Lakshman said, this is not Ram, this is just his demon. So at that time, what happened was that Sita felt so agitated that Ram might be in danger. And somehow, in order to goad Ram to act, she accused Lakshman of having an evil eye on her. Now Lakshman had never thought in that way. And Lakshman felt grievously hurt by it. So he left at that time. And that was that whole thing was unfortunate. Sita was abducted. But eventually, when Ram, Lakshman, all of them were reunited, at that time there is no account in the Ramayana that Lakshman told Sita, see, you spoke like that, apologize now. So what is spoken, intention, we shouldn't see intention in that. So what is spoken, intention. Sometimes intention, people may speak certain things, but we don't have to see intention in that. In that, overall that person has been behaving in a respectable, positive way, and sometimes in anger somebody comes and speaks something, then that doesn't have to be taken so seriously. Okay. Yes. So how much does the Paramatma play a role, or how much does the three modes play a role in our actions? Certainly, we could say that the Paramatma is the supreme decider. But these three things, we, the modes, and the Paramatma, let's see how these three act. One example, suppose a thief commits a crime, say a thief robs a bank. Then the thief say, decides to go to rob a bank, and before the thief can rob the bank, or after the thief robs the bank, whatever, the police come and the police catch and put the person in jail. The police catch the person and then the judge sentences the person for a particular time in jail. So in this case, there are, when the person ultimately goes to the jail for say 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, then for that person going to jail, three factors are involved. The person is trying to rob the bank, the police arresting, and the judge sentencing. So the person committing the crime is like the jiva doing a particular thing. Jiva, this is like the soul desiring to do a particular thing. The police is like the modes of nature. And Krishna is like the Paramatma. The judge will not sentence the person unless that person has committed some crime. So generally, the modes don't force us to do anything. The modes push us and we can push back. But how much can we push back? That depends on how we have ourselves acted in the past. Say, we can give an example of a computer or a phone. Suppose on their phone somebody has repeatedly visited a particular website. Say somebody has repeatedly visited Bollywood.com. Again and again they have visited many times. And they come for a spiritual program. And they hear about the Bhagavad Gita. Hey, this Bhagavad Gita seems interesting. Let me find out more about the Bhagavad Gita. Then they type in their phone's browser, Bhagavad Gita. Now, as soon as they type B, what happens? Bollywood immediately comes up over there. So now they didn't want to go to Bollywood at that time. But because of what they had chosen in the past, that will come as an autocomplete. So similarly, for us, based on how we have acted in the past, the modes are basic. How do the modes act on us? The modes act based on the way we have acted previously. So now when Bollywood.com comes on the browser, that may come as an autocomplete, that may come as a default also. So when it comes, it will come on its own. But whether to click on that so that it opens up, or whether to keep watching that, that is still up to us. So what comes up on the screen is not in our control. But whether we keep it on the screen, that is in our control. So similarly for us, the modes will propose certain things to us. The modes propose, they don't impose. The modes by default will propose. For some person who is short-tempered, by nature, whenever they feel troubled, whenever they feel frustrated, they will get angry. So the angry response will be the first response that will come. But to the extent that person can understand, okay, has a higher purpose, okay, I want to visit Bhagavad-gita.com, then they will change and they will not go there. So they can choose. So that depends on how strong our intention is. And our intention is shaped also by our intelligence. Just like I talked, that we may feel angry, but in our office we won't yell at our boss. Because with our intelligence you understand that this is a question of my livelihood. So similarly for us, if our intelligence is strong, then even if something comes as autocomplete, we will not choose that. We will choose something else. And Krishna's role simply is at two levels. Krishna creates this whole system by which we can choose how we are going to act. And lastly, Krishna also, he can change a whole computer's programming. That means when we become purified by Krishna's mercy. Purification essentially means that if we keep, say, practicing bhakti yoga, so that is like if we repeatedly visit bhagavadgita.com, then over a period of time, when we type B, automatically Bhagavad Gita will come instead of Bollywood. So this can happen simply by mechanical repetition. That's how it will work out in Google if you are searching. But when you are practicing bhakti, Krishna is not just like a Google. Krishna is not Google, Krishna is God. So, so what happens? If we keep choosing a particular option, somebody may have visited Bollywood 100 times and then visit Bhagavad Gita only 10 times. But if Krishna sees this person really wants to become spiritual, then Krishna can change the inner priority so that the desired option, the healthier option, that comes up automatically. And that is how we can, then the inner struggle decreases. So we can't control what will be our first thought, what will be our first reaction internally. But we can choose whether we go along with that or we can edit that. So that is the free will which you always have. Okay? Thank you. So, yeah.
We are all born with a certain characteristic of vastness. That vastness is not going to change. But working against the vastness, who will become an ego friend for us internally? It's good for the external world we are acting. But this acting, we know we are acting.
Okay.
But does it not make us ego friend internally on the long run?
Good question, yes. So, if we all have certain nature, so we all have certain vasanas. So, if we don't act, if we try to act in a different way externally, it may be good for others, but does it make us a hypocrite? Hypocrite is a very strong word. Basically, none of us can look into each other's minds. And that is a great blessing. No, if we all could look at each other's minds, not a single relationship would be possible.
Yeah.
You think like this about me? You think like that? You desire like that? What kind of person are you? So nature has itself given us a buffer between our emotions and our actions. That's our emotions, the thoughts, the desires, the emotions. They, when they come in the mind, they don't get immediately expressed externally as actions. So now there are three broad possibilities with respect to how we feel internally and how we act externally. One is that we say, I'm feeling angry internally, but I'm trying to act politely externally. Now one could be that I'm acting politely externally just to get the other person to lower their guard, and then I will stab them. And so basically I want to act according to the emotion, but I'm just waiting for an opportunity. So like some person may be very greedy and they want to rob an employee, but externally they act very honest. When if they find some money lying down, they go and give the money back. And then they earn the trust. And then when they earn the trust, then they get the access to the treasury and they rob the whole treasury. So what is happening over there? There is the internal unhealthy emotion and there is the external healthy action. Good action. But that good action is done not so that one wants to give up the bad emotion, but one wants just a better facility to act on the bad emotion after. So if that is the case, where we are not at all fighting against the bad emotion, but we are simply waiting for an opportunity to act on the bad emotion afterwards, then that is bad. That is what we could call as hypocrisy. But we could have another situation. This is one extreme, where the bad emotion is, the good action is simply a cover up for the bad emotion to get a bigger opportunity in the future. The other extreme is, other side of this could be, that we don't want to feel like that. But somehow that is the feeling that is coming within us. So, we restrain the outer expression. At the same time, we also try to change the inner emotion through purification. So, Krishna says, when we have to deal with karma, the first thing he says, tasmattam indriyanyadav, Niyamya Bharatarshama Papamanam Prajahiyainam Jnana Vidyana Nashanam. First Krishna says, control your senses. Every society requires some external curbs. Imagine there are different people who go on strike, say in India. Sometimes the medical staff may go on strike, sometimes the train employees go on strike. Now imagine if the police went on strike. What will happen? All the criminals will strike immediately. Right? It's not just a criminal will strike, even ordinary people may take the opportunity and commit crimes. So in general, some external control is required. And external control keeps us protected. I just 2-3 months ago, I was in 2 months ago in America, I was speaking at Google on self-management. So in Google, they had done an experiment that, because it's primarily software work, which is mostly sedentary. So a lot of people were getting obese. And they found that that was having a significant cost in terms of medical insurance for the company also. So they consulted some experts, some psychologists, and they adopted one policy that in their cafeteria, where they sell food, all the desserts that were there, chocolates, cookies, and cakes, everything, they covered it, they placed it in non-transparent boxes. It is there, if people want it, they can take it, but it's just not visible prominently. And they found just by that, almost 30% of consumption of desserts went down. So what happened here was, not that they stopped people, you cannot forbid people. But as soon as you see the external, the desire comes up. You don't see the external, the desire may not come up. In some cases, the desire will still be there. The point I am making here is, that even in today's world, if there is some amount of external regulation, that also helps in internal discipline. Like somebody still wants to eat a dessert, even if they can't see, they'll ask, do you have this? Get it for me. It's also possible. But externals often prompt our internals. And if you can avoid the external expression, not to cover up the internals, but to not give in to the internal, then the internal can also be cured. So in bhakti, when we follow the etiquette of bhakti, say we try to control our vasanas. That is, not just in that third extreme, that is that we want to become purified. Let's become purified. So these are two things. One is, the external is a cover up so that we can do the internal. The second is, the external is the restraint we are keeping so that we can purify the internal. Now, in between could be a third situation where we have certain desires and we can't give them up. But there is a regulated way in which we express them. The regulated way in which we express them means that not all desires are bad and not all desires are to be given up. Dharma aviruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatavsham. Krishna says, kaam is not bad. Kaam that makes us give up dharma, kaam that makes us violate dharma, that is bad. So there are regulated ways in which, there are proper dharmic ways in which we can express our emotions also. So whatever emotion that might be there, whatever desire might be there, there are different ashrams in life, there are different situations in life. And appropriately one can express oneself. The Pandavas controlled their anger for a long time. But eventually, when they got angry, then they realized that the Kauravas are not giving up their animosity. They fought a war. So they channeled their anger, but in a dharmic way. So in a proper Kshatriya war they fought, and that's how they channeled their anger. So there are times when in a regulated way emotions can also be expressed. So we don't want to suppress our nature, but at the same time, we don't want to be a slave to our nature also. So, I'll conclude this answer with an example. Let's see, we are bound to our nature, but we are not bound by our nature. What is the difference? Say somebody is bound to a rope, say bound by a rope to a pole. Now they're bound to the pole, that rope will bind them and they can't break the bondage. But suppose that pole is not very heavy, like we have the Damodar Leela, in which Krishna was tied to a grinding mortar. Krishna couldn't untie the rope, but Krishna moved with the grinding mortar. So he was bound to the mortar, but he was not bound by the motor. So with the motor he could move. So similarly for us, we have a particular nature. We can't change that nature. A Kshatriya will act in a particular way, a Brahmana will act in a particular way. A Brahmana can be forgiving. Brahmana's characteristic is forgiveness. Kshatriya's characteristic is justice. So both of them are important in society. So if a Kshatriya is asked to forgive, it's difficult. If a Brahmana is told to seek justice, that Brahmana will feel, why get into this whole thing? So each person will act according to their nature. But both can act dharmically. Both can pursue dharma. So that means I may be bound to a particular, by a particular rope to a particular pole. But still, while being bound, do I stay at the same place? Or do I go in the direction of my destination, or do I go in the opposite direction? That is still up to me. So there are certain things about us which are limited by our nature, but we still have freedom. And if we use our free will properly, we can act constructively even within the limits of what has been imposed on us by our nature. So it limits us, but it doesn't control us. So our nature is like, say, if there's a body of water over here, and there's a channel. So the water cannot move in this direction or that direction, it can only move through the channel. But we can channel that water flow in such a way that it goes to the destination. So within the limits of our nature, we can choose to act dharmically. We acknowledge that certain emotions are inevitable for me. So I'll feel those emotions, but we can express those emotions also in a dharmic way. Okay? Thank you. We'll stop here, or one last question. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki
Jai.
Tai Gaur Premanande.